Welcome to Don't Give Up on Testicular Cancer, a podcast where testicular cancer survivors, caregivers, and others who have navigated the cancer journey share their stories. The podcast comes to you from the Max Mallory Foundation, a nonprofit family foundation focused on educating about testicular cancer in honor and in memory of Max Mallory, who died in 2016 at the young age of 22 from testicular cancer. Had he survived, Max wanted to help young adults with cancer. This podcast helps meet that goal. Here now is your host, Joy Slofstrom, Max's mom and a young adult cancer survivor.
Joyce, and with me today is Matt Frostad, a two-time testicular cancer survivor. He received his diagnosis as a freshman in college and also as a senior in college. That's more than 10 years ago. He tells his story not only of survival, but life after cancer with marriage, IVF, and giving back to others with testicular cancer. So Matt, thanks for joining me today. I'm glad that we can talk.
Thanks, Joyce. I'm excited to be here.
I always start with just having my guest tell his story about what happened with your testicular cancer. And I know you had two different diagnoses. And so tell us about the first one when you were a freshman in college.
So I was a freshman in college and taking freshman biology or biology 101. And we had gotten on the topic of talking about cancers or on the subject of talking about cancers. And I remembered that I was always taught to check myself for testicular cancer. And I just so happened to feel a lump, a very small lump, while I was in the shower later that evening. I didn't think too much of it, and I thought it was probably just overreacting or me being a hypochondriac, because we're literally talking about that in biology during the lecture, and didn't give it much thought until after the weekend. It was still there, and it seemed or appeared to be growing. My biology lab was actually canceled that day. So I took that as a sign to go to the emergency room to get it checked out, because quite honestly, I didn't know what else to do at that point. So I got it checked out, and they ran some tests, ultrasound, things of that nature. And the urologist walks in and says, "It looks like you have cancer, but the only way to know definitively is if we go in and remove it. So I've scheduled you for surgery first thing tomorrow morning." So Wow. Just like that, I was told I had cancer, and, you know, went through with the surgery the next day, you know, of course, informed my parents of everything that was going on. And I think it was all just a shock to everybody around me, but it was caught early. It was stage 1A and a mixed germ cell tumor that, you know, we didn't continue with any other form of treatment, no chemo, no additional surgeries or anything along those lines. And I entered a surveillance phase, which I thought would be for the next 5 years or so.
So I just want to comment on one thing that you said about being taught to check yourself. Was that your pediatrician that did that?
No, that was actually my stepdad. He was in the Navy, but, you know, raising my brother and I, he always, you know, kind of gave us the talk of the importance of checking yourself and making sure that everything is as it's supposed to be.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, because I think that's so important for people to hear, because a lot of the men I've interviewed don't have that advantage, and nobody told them, the doctor or their parents, to check. So I just wanted to ask you about that, because I think it's important to know. Well, let's move on to your second diagnosis then.
So I was entered the surveillance phase, and for the first year and a half, 2 years almost, everything was going fine. I was having regular labs checked, regular imaging, and everything was coming back as it should. We're clean. So I was moving into college my senior year and noticed some swelling, some discomfort in the remaining testicle, and immediately scheduled an appointment for my urologist. At this point, you know, kind of had a little bit of knowledge and what to do. So I had an appointment with my urologist probably the next week, and he did some tests, he did an ultrasound, and didn't think anything in terms of testicular cancer, but he thought that while I was moving in, maybe I bumped it on something and the swelling, that was causing the swelling, and ultimately gave me an antibiotic for epididymitis, which is a very long, thin tube on the backside of the testicle that sometimes can get swollen and, you know, is tender and, you know, all of those things that I was experiencing. But knowing that that was my only testicle remaining, you know, gave me some pause for concern. Took the antibiotics, and maybe a month or so later, I went back. The swelling was still there. Not necessarily feeling a lump, but it definitely didn't feel like it should. So the doctor repeated the ultrasound and noticed that there was some growth on what could be a mass. Again, this was the same urologist that diagnosed me the first time, and his diagnosis was very similar. It looks like there might be something there, but the only way to know is to go in and remove the testicle. And at that point, he didn't feel comfortable scheduling the surgery. I didn't feel comfortable with him scheduling the surgery without getting a second opinion.
Right.
So he referred me to another urologist, one that does see, you know, more patients, more testicular cancer patients on a yearly basis. And ultimately, I went in and had a second opinion with that doctor as well. He came to the same conclusion that it looks like, you know, there's testicular cancer in there, but the only way to remove it, or only way to know, is to remove it. And that's when the conversation started about, you know, family planning and what the future might look like. And mind you, I'm 22 years old at the time and not really sure what the future holds for me. I just want to, you know, graduate college and start my career at that point. So there are some larger life decisions to be made before surgery could take place.
So what did you do then? So you were facing surgery and then also, you know, what to do about long-term outcomes that you don't know about yet with a family and children and so forth. So that's one question, like what was the next step? But I'm curious, did you do all this in your college town or did you have to go home and quit school for a while, or how did that work out?
So ultimately it ended up lining up perfectly with the winter break that I was able to get my second opinion and then, you know, having the conversations with the doctor there. But I ultimately sperm banked. So we did schedule surgery for about 2 weeks after that follow-up appointment. And that allowed me to sperm bank twice. Fortunately, back in my hometown, that's where I was going to see this doctor. There is a large fertility center that, you know, offered sperm banking and storage. Because that was one of the things that my urologist talked to me about was, you know, a company or two that he had known about, but you would basically collect sperm at home and then send it away to a lab. And that gave me some discomfort in just, you know, trusting the logistics of shipping and
right.
Third parties being involved. Whereas I was able to go to the clinic in town and they were able to do everything kind of in-house and store that for me.
So what did they find with the surgery? You had that second surgery. Was it a lot? I know you said it was swelling.
So there was a mass, and in the second surgery, they, after the biopsy and pathology report came back, it was a completely different tumor makeup. So both cancers were completely separate from each other. And that, I'm told, is like a 0.2% chance of that happening. So it wasn't necessarily a reoccurrence, but a new cancer mass.
Formed
in my left testicle at that point.
So did you have to do chemo?
So this is where things got a little bit tricky. And I didn't know at the time, you know, what the decision I was making was. Like I said, I was just trying to finish college and start my career. So knowing that this was a second type of cancer, you know, again, it was caught at stage 1A. So it was early. And talking with the doctor of, you know, if this was your first, you know, occurrence of cancer, then, you know, I would just recommend surveillance. But given that this is, you know, now your second time getting testicular cancer, you know, the doctor was recommending possibly a lymph node surgery removal and or some type of localized radiation and chemotherapy. However, being stubborn and going into my senior semester or last semester of my senior year, I wanted to finish college. And there were a lot of conversations that went back and forth. The doctor ultimately brought it to a tumor board at the cancer institution or cancer center. And it was a 50-50 split. So
wow. Oh boy.
It was surprising. So the doctor gave me the choice, and I opted to finish college. Thankfully, that ended up being a okay decision. However, I didn't realize the mental kind of stress that would put on me years later. I would say after I graduated and really hitting that 2 year mark of, okay, well, this is when, you know, I got cancer the last time was 2 years into, you know, my surveillance. You know, is something going to happen? Is the other shoe going to drop? That probably went on for a couple of years where, you know, having the scan anxiety of getting blood work done, having an ultrasound done, and my urologist after, you know, finally settling down and moving to Williamsburg, Virginia, my oncologist who I'd been going to see and kind of completed my 5 year surveillance with said, you know, look, we can continue to do these annually, or, you know, you really don't have to come back and see me. And I opted to continue to see him and have tests done annually. And I still have blood work done. I haven't had imaging done in a couple of years. And I know you mentioned, you know, it's been over 10 years now, so might be time for just peace of mind, getting some imaging done.
Right. Right.
But as of last month, actually, my tumor markers and everything were stable. So
you never did chemo or radiation. It's always been surveillance. Is that correct?
Yep, right. Exactly.
So, you know, listening to you, it tells me again how personal this disease is. And it's true of any cancer. It affects each person differently, but you had two different cancers and, you know, the surgery worked. You didn't have to do chemo or anything. And so far, it's what, 10 plus years, surveillance is, you know, you stay on top of it. And, you know, I find it always just fascinating because everybody's story is different, how it works out, I guess is what I'll say. So I'm glad you're okay. That's just a lot to go through so young. Through all of this, what was your biggest challenge?
I would say the biggest challenge was probably just not knowing what the future holds. And I think that still rings true today. While it's not necessarily as top of mind as it was maybe say 5, 7, 10 years ago, there's still always that, you know, unknown or uncertainty about, you know, what is my health going to be, knowing my past and just doing everything that I can to make sure that I stay on top of it and just knowing that I'm doing my part to make sure that I stay on top of everything.
You know, I think that's very common with cancer survivors. I feel the same way. I'm a cancer survivor, and you always just, it's always there kind of in the back of your mind. You may not dwell on it, but there's that kind of, as you say, that uncertainty of what's ahead. And I read about you on the Ballsy Sense of Tumor blog that you wrote. And also, you know, we connected on Instagram, but you were very open in that blog post and talked about what you'd been through. And then you wondered if getting married and would somebody really want to get married after, and you called it castration. Talk about that a little bit, just how you managed that life after all of this, you know, before you met your wife, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. So fortunately, and I'll caveat it with this, is fortunately I was dating my wife. During the second time. So she was there. She was a part of all of it. I couldn't imagine if she wasn't a part of it and knowing kind of what everything that I was going through and everything. But I will say the thing that helped me the most after especially my second surgery was being in college still and being around all of my friends that could help me make light of the situation. You know, there were never enough ball jokes to go around. and you know, that was something that helped me get through everything. And, you know, still to this day, you know, I try to be professional and not, you know, crack a joke in a meeting or something, but, you know, even work people that know about everything that I've been through, it's, you know, it's hard not to crack a joke whenever the opportunity presents itself.
I agree. Yeah. You have to be able to laugh at yourself and at life to survive, I think. So I know you did the IVF, and that was another part of your story. And I'll just comment because you were able to do it twice to, you know, preserve your sperm. And I just think that's another stress that's part of this cancer is just sometimes it's so immediate. You know, you have to go do this today. And I just think that's hard. I mean, I'm not a guy, so I haven't had to do it. But I just, I know Max, my son, had to do that and couldn't. And I just think that's, I just want to comment on that because I know you did do that. And now we're going to talk about what happened because you did. So tell us about the IVF experience.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I will say, you know, growing up quickly is something that cancer has caused me to do in making those decisions about like sperm banking, even where it was going to be done. Those were not easy decisions to make. And then, you know, not knowing, you know, when or if this will ever get used. Again, that's kind of one of those unknowns. But like I mentioned, my wife and I were dating at the time of my second surgery and cancer diagnosis, but we ended up getting married about 5 or 6 years later. And after we got settled into our careers, you know, saved up some money because we knew that we would have to go through IVF, we started that process. And that process was one of, you know, a lot of curveballs, I would say, that were unexpected. And we thought, you know, going into this that, oh, okay, you know, I had testicular cancer. Obviously, I'm not producing any sperm. They're going to, you know, create embryos with my wife's eggs. And then, you know, we'll get pregnant. It'll be quick. It's just going to cost a lot of money. But, you know, we'll get pregnant and we'll have a kid in no time. So little did we know, it's not always that simple.
Right.
And we ended up doing IVF. I think we ended up doing 3 egg retrievals, followed by 3 transfers until the 4th one actually took and my wife became pregnant.
Wow. Jeez.
All of this started in 2019. And then, you know, we went into the early stages of the pandemic, going through the transfers and things like that. And ultimately changing clinics that we were going to for IVF. And there were just a lot of things out there that about the process of IVF that we didn't know that we quickly educated ourselves on as we went through that journey.
And so it worked, if I can ask.
Yes. So it worked. My wife gave birth to our baby last December. So time is flying. I can't believe that she will be 9 months here soon, but we couldn't be more excited.
That's wonderful. I think you make a good point about the process. And I mean, I have some girlfriends who have gone through it and just talked to other people or read about it. I mean, it really is. It's not like, oh, okay, so here's the egg and here's the sperm and we're just going to implant it. I mean, it's like weeks of things you have to do and prep and then you have to hope it takes, you know. And so I can't imagine what you went through.
The timing is everything because it's based on the body and, you know, the things that she's experiencing, but there's a lot more needles involved than anybody tells you about.
Okay. That's another podcast, I guess, huh?
Exactly.
So what advice, you were young when you found out you had testicular cancer. What advice do you have for other young men or any man that might think they have the disease or they're going through the treatment now?
Yeah, I think, you know, post-diagnosis and working with folks within the testicular cancer community, my biggest thing is about education. You know, I credit that to what saved my life is just knowing to check yourself for testicular cancer because there's not always pain associated. Actually, it's pretty uncommon that pain is associated with testicular cancer. It's usually just the lump or feeling something off, but you don't know to necessarily check for that unless you're taught. So education is huge, and going to college campuses and things like that to help spread the word is really important, and something that I've done a couple of different times to various different schools. But I think the biggest thing for folks that are newly diagnosed, you know, still going through it, because I talk to a lot of people that, you know, they do unfortunately have to go through chemo and they do have to, you know, continue treatment and things like that. Maybe it's surgery that they're working towards and dealing with chemo and stuff like that. So it's always, you know, keeping a positive attitude and connecting with others that have been there. Because, you know, as you know, cancer or really any chronic condition can be very isolating, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, because there are so many people out there that have been through what you might be going through or what you will be going through. And they are able to share and provide their perspective on things. And it's important to, you know, ask questions and be informed about what's to come. Everybody's experience is going to be a little bit different, but to know that somebody else has been there and they've gotten through it is a lot more reassuring for somebody that's going through it than somebody might think.
Well, I know you mentioned in the blog post that you have been involved with the Testicular Cancer Foundation and they helped you on your journey. Anything you can share about that? Are you still working with them? Or that sounds like, I know it is a good resource for men going through testicular cancer.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the Testicular Cancer Foundation is a great organization. I work closely with them. You know, a lot of friends that are a part of that organization. I think you actually interviewed Connor before on
Yes, I did. Yep.
We were talking about that last week, I think. But no, it's really great. And they are somebody that, you know, will help connect you with other people that are going through a similar time, a similar experience. Until getting connected with the Testicular Cancer Foundation, I had never talked to somebody else that was a two-time testicular cancer survivor. And, you know, that was huge for me. And I know it was huge for that person too. And they were recently diagnosed and I had been through it, you know, out of it for a couple of years. And, you know, they do weekly Zoom calls where it's just a group of guys that join and maybe they're talking about cancer, but maybe they're also just talking about soccer matches, football, you know, whatever it might be, sports, cars, life in general. But it's just a way to build community and connect with other guys that have been through similar life experiences, really.
Well, you know, that key word you said there, community, that's what we all need. And especially going through cancer diagnosis, finding that group of men like you did through the Testicular Cancer Foundation is so important because you're not alone and you know that hopefully you're going to be okay and you're going to make it. So I was going to ask you again about life now with what you've been through and losing both testicles, getting married, having a baby. I think you probably answered it, but I mean, anything around that you want to add? And I think it's more that, I mean, that's a lot to go through as so young. And, you know, I've interviewed a few guys that had lost both of their testicles. So, I mean, anything else to add around that that would be relevant, Matt?
I would say, you know, maybe 10, almost 11 years ago, where I was in terms of receiving that second diagnosis and going through surgery, opting for surveillance. I was a lot different of a person then. Now I'm married. Now I have a kid. There's a lot more to life than just getting out there as quickly as possible and starting my career. So I'm not saying things would be differently, but there's a lot more to consider and think about. And I think that's the important part now of making sure that I, you know, still have my annual blood work done and, you know, I'm still seeing my doctor on a regular basis to make sure that, you know, there's nothing that is out of the ordinary.
That's right. And it's making time for you and doing not just cancer things, but, you know, you have a life with your family and your career and whatever you do for fun. So yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's next for you? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to tie it back to like building community that, you know, there's things and, you know, maybe it's being a guy, maybe it's just wanting to separate the two things, but, you know, there's things that I don't necessarily talk to my wife about with testicular cancer or being a cancer survivor, that the guys from TCF that I, you know, work with, they are my, you know, support. They are my resource. They're my sounding board for those types of things. And, you know, it's always great to have people that you can connect with that fully understand what you have going on because, you know, they're able to put themselves in those shoes.
You know, and I think people sometimes, this is just a general statement, but that kind of a support group for any reason, I mean, any disease, any whatever, is so important. And sometimes you don't realize the value of it until you get into one and start talking to people and realize you're not alone and you learn a lot from them, from the people in the group. I mean, I have diabetes and I've done that. And, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't know that. And it's just something that people live with the disease, and they have insights that you don't know, and vice, you know, you have insights you can share. So I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, it's always great. I mean, this sounds horrible, but it's always great when somebody that is about to start chemotherapy joins one of the calls, and all of the guys that have been through chemo, they're able to offer life hacks and, you know, hey, you're going to expect this, like, it's not going to hit you until this happens or this, that, and the other, but they're able to help them better prepare for what's coming. And you don't necessarily get that by just talking to your doctor or talking to loved ones that are close to you that right. haven't been through that. So
what's next for you, Matt? What's on the horizon?
It's a good question. I think we are going to potentially try to have another child, maybe not, you know, next month, but maybe sometime in the next year. So continuing to grow our family, but traveling. We love to travel and can't wait to explore the world. There's so much out there we've yet to see and can't wait to experience it. So, you know, hoping to stay healthy and be able to do all of that.
That sounds great. Traveling is always fun. And you're right. There's just so much to find and discover in the U.S. and anywhere. So have fun when you do that.
Thank you.
My last question is, so what song, when you hear it, you have to sing along? Is there one song that just grabs you that way?
Oof. It's got to be probably Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Swedes. There's just something about that song, you know, when it starts off with the Ooga Chakas, that you have to sing along. You just get into it.
That's great. Okay. I always say Beatles. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's probably what we sing along to the most in the house. But I swear, you know, or Bruce Springsteen, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Cranked up on the radio. And I'm not a very great singer. So it's like the radio gets turned up, the windows go down, anything to drown out my voice. Love to sing along.
Well, I'll just say this to close. When I was in fourth grade, the nun went to a Catholic school in Kansas City, and she told me to fake it because we were singing. We were going to some nursing home, and there were eight of us, and she just said, why don't you just mouth the words? I'll never forget that. So I'm not a good singer either, but, you know, you still do it.
Nuns, they'll tell you like it is, I guess.
Yes,
right?
They will. Yes, they will. That was many decades ago, but she was right. I was off key. But anyway, so Matt, thank you for taking the time and talking with me and sharing your story for our listeners. And just wish you much happiness in the months ahead, years ahead. And thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was great talking with you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Don't Give Up on Testicular Cancer. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to our program on your favorite podcast directory. You can also visit the Max Mallory Foundation at www.maxmalloryfoundation.com/podcast to listen to previous podcast episodes or donate to the foundation. And join us again next time for another episode of Don't Give Up on Testicular Cancer.